all doesn't stop because of Mario Bekes. Nobody cares for Mario Bekes. There's no book which can teach you how to live the better life. There's no person who can teach you how to be happy. There's nobody. It's just you and you. The only person who never gonna lie to you is that person in the mirror. And I couldn't face, that was me.
Welcome to the Inspired to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Welcome back to Inspired to Thrive and Shine. Today's guest needs no introduction, because if you've been with us for a while, you will know that Mario Bekes is one of those rare individuals whose presence leaves a mark long after the conversation ends. Mario has fought battles most of us will never even see, both on literal battlegrounds and in the quiet, relentless arenas of the mind and the heart. He is a man of military precision, sharp intelligence, and unwavering resilience. He is not only a veteran of war, but a living masterclass in what it means to lead, to endure, and to evolve. But today we're going deeper, because beneath the medals, the strategies, and the expertise in secret intelligence is a man who's weathered emotional storms, psychological warfare, and the kind of mental pressure that could break most. I want to peel back the layers with Mario to explore the emotional and the psychological battles that shaped him. The mindsets that have helped him not just survive, but to thrive. And we're also going to explore a confronting truth and reality. What are men's biggest downfalls, especially when it comes to women? Why do so many strong, capable men still fall apart emotionally in their relationships or lose themselves in the pursuit of power, control, or validation? Because at the core of it, every single person deserves to succeed. But what often stops them is themselves. So buckle in. This episode isn't just about strategy or war, but it's about humanity, vulnerability, humility, business, leadership, and the strength to own your story, no matter how brutal the battle. Ladies and gentlemen, let's dive in. Mario, you have fought battles that most people could not even imagine. You fought battles both literally on the battlefield, but also mental battles, emotional battles. And I want to begin this episode by firstly finding out what was a moment that really tested you, not just physically, but emotionally and also spiritually as well.
Well, thank you, Phoebe. First of all, thank you for being today here. You know what I mean? And thank you to interview me, because it's a privilege to be, you know, be part of your journey, of your podcasting. So when we talk about life, there must be the moment in life, as you're asking, like, which defined us. So for me, it was a 14th of July, 1991. As you know, I grew up in communism, you know what I mean? But my family was, it wasn't very religious, but I became religious. You know I mean, as a kid, you know, church was sort of like escape from reality, and I saw these things. And on the 14th of July, 1991, everything what I was believing or I stand for or I was told I'm made for collapsed on that day. I was being asked to rush into the army barracks. So at age 18, you know, you need to serve the army. The civil war broke out in Croatia, which was understandable from one side. But the night before, I was very, very drunk because my first love and the woman I was, you know, was so much in love with, she left him because of the differences in religion, the differences in nationality. So the war broke out and I was very, very drunk. And that night, I didn't even know my parents left me, like literally left me. And in the morning, I heard somebody banging on my door. And I said, who can be that? Why my mom doesn't open the door, my dad? And there was a military police, and they told me that I need to report to army barracks immediately, right? So I said, like, okay, I'll report to army barracks in a few minutes, you know. Couple of hours, but just, you know, what the time it is, and, you know, I was drunk night before, so I'm still, you know, smelling of alcohol and all these things. And I remember I was walking back into unit. They left me, they told me 3 hours, I need to report to the army barracks. So the thing it is, once when I walked back into the unit, I found a piece of paper, my mom or my dad wrote it, we are okay, and they left me. So everything what I knew about that moment, it actually collapsed. The love, the government I was, state I was born, Yugoslavia, you know, started disappearing. My parents betrayed me. I mean, my father, who was the biggest alpha male, I knew it. You know, I mean, he was the biggest coward. And my mom was supposed to be there for me. After all, I'm her son, you know, I mean, like, I'm her child, you know, I'm 18 years old. So that was the moment, 14th of July, 1991, when everything what I was believing for, I was standing for, I was told I gonna be or I should become, actually collapsed. So yeah, it's changed totally 360 degrees. Yeah.
Was there anything that happened after the war that made you see life or see the world differently?
Yeah, look, it's, you know, you and I spoke privately about these things, and I expressed my concerns about war. I think that every man, the purpose it is to defend his own family. I'm saying every man, he needs to defend those who love most country. And I was being brought up to that, to that, in those beliefs. You had one country, one God, and, you know, I mean, one mother. It turns out that my mother wasn't so much into me as I was into her. So that was big, big change for me, and I distanced myself from my family because I couldn't be with my family anymore. I didn't want to become something I should be because society told me, you know, like, you need to become like your father, because my father in my eyes was the biggest coward. And even today, I try to understand why. You know, I mean, why would you be something till the precise moment when you need to show your manhood and your courage and everything else to protect your family? Secondly, the government, I have the big beliefs in government, so that was changed for me, because the government actually, you know, when the war's finished, they literally said to you goodbye. I was one of the lucky one. I was professional officer and then transferred into the security intelligence services in different branch and different government sector, so I was okay. But that was the one thing changing me, that I'm never going to become my parents. That's the one thing, I'm never going to become my parents.
Wow. Mm. I actually feel like that's something a lot of people say. Mm. And that's one of a lot of, I think it's a common fear that a lot of people have, but it's also something that is inevitable. In fact, we sometimes manifest our fears, don't you think? It's like, the more people don't want to be like their mom or their dad, all of a sudden one day something happens and you're like, shit.
Mm. Look, I've believed that we all, you know, I think the fear is normal. And I mean, first of all, I can't understand people who advocating or, you know, try to convince other people fear is bad, fear is this, fear is that. I always say this with all my honesty, with my open heart. I think I was in a war more afraid than I was not afraid. You know, there was more moments when I was afraid, which is normal. You're going to lose your life. When you see that one moment, you know, you're laughing with your buddies, the second moment you pick up the body parts, you know, I mean, around you. You know, it's a blood everywhere, the screams and everything else. You know that life is becoming very cheap, you know, I mean, really, really, you are disposable, you know what I mean? So you are not that person you think you are, you're told. You're going to be invincible, you know, you need to be brave. So, like, I agree with you that things that change us, you know what I mean, and the being afraid, it's normal. That's first and foremost, I would say this one. And that is something I always come back to these moments in my life when, even clearly I can see right now, when the people are afraid, they don't know what to do it. At these moments, you need to step out and say, like, okay, we're all afraid, right? And there's many moments in my life and I need to take that role as the youngest one to lead older guys than me, you know what I mean? To say, like, it's gonna be better, Phoebe. And, you know, your question is spot on. Like, I just now just revoking the memory, so I'm sorry. Just that's all. Yeah.
I'd like to know how someone can rebuild after they've been through so much chaos and destruction. How did Mario Beckus rebuild his life, whether it's after war or when everything, you know, like I've read your book.
Thank you.
It's raw. It's so, the chapters pack a punch and there's so much that you've been through. And in such a small book, there's like 50 books that I feel like I've read in this book. How each time you went through the disappointment, whether it was from your parents or war or your country or even the woman that you fell in love with, how did you rebuild from that chaos and from the grubble and pick yourself up from the grubble and just end up here sitting across from me now, you know, smile on your face, you're a peaceful man, you listen to jazz. Like, yeah, share with us. How did you do that?
I think that everything in life, because most of my life I spent questioning myself. That was my biggest, I think that was my biggest downfall. I was pleasing people, right? You know, Phoebe, from the women in my life, you know, I always wanted something the best, you know, I mean, to prove, not to me, but others, I'm capable to have that this, you know, unique girlfriend, you know, something like this. And more I wanted, more I was being slapped in the face. You know, like virtually, physically and mentally, you know, whatever you wanted, either your parents tells you not to do it, don't do it. You know, I mean, society tells you.
You can't.
Who the fuck you think you are exactly? Look, I wasn't a bright student. You know, I mean, I end up in juvenile as age 12. I can say this one, I said to my son, I was stupid, naive. I stabbed the guy with a screwdriver, you know what I mean? I end up in the prison, you know what I mean? I was lucky. My grandfather, who was a highly positioned communist intelligence officer, second in charge of Yugoslavia, he pulled all connections to put me back on track. And when, you know, even during the war, like I questioned myself, how come I'm in the war? Like, you know, where's all these guys with A-grade students, you know what I mean? Where they are all these people I cherish it, you know, I build heroes, you know, I build pantheons of the courage, you know, for them, you know, I mean, the gods. I think there was a moment in my life when I stopped doubting myself. And when I said to myself, there was a few moments, let's go laugh. In my first book, Blood, Soccer, Soil, the book ends up with 15th of January, 1992, when the Croatia was internationally recognized. And that day was the bloodiest days ever, I remember. And I can recall right now, I saw the hot air behind the plane, somewhere in the sky, somewhere, who knows where it was, but you can see, you know, it was a clear winter day. It was like 10 o'clock in the morning or something. And I know we watched on the TV down in the bunker, it was some show. And the girls in topless were dancing and eating its burgers. And they were in Ibiza. And I said to everybody, one day I'm going to be on that plane and I'll be in Ibiza. It's going to be warm. I'm going to have a cheeseburger and I'm going to have this one. Everybody was laughing. So like, come on, stop their dreaming. So I have the clear goal. And 7 days later, sorry, 7 years later, apologies, I was in Australia. So when you ask me how I rebuilt, it was a moment I stopped doubting myself, justify myself to society, what I want, how I want. And when I stopped to become the prisoner of other people's opinion, because it doesn't matter what you do in your life, you're always prisoner of other people's opinion. And that was the moment in my life. I remember when my son was born and we find out he has epilepsy. That was the moment when I said to myself, you know, I done enough, justify myself to the world, because now I need to take a care. One day I want to become the book writer. of course, people laughing to you. Phoebe, you know this, you know. People laughing to you because of the for whatever you believe, whatever you stand for, they will tell you not to do it. So the moment when my son was born, that was the most important moment in my life, when I realized that for him, I need to fulfill my dreams, because my dreams will be related to secure his some type of future, right? So that was the moment, yeah. Stop being the prisoner of other people's opinions.
Wow. Mm. When you ended up doing intelligence mm-hmm. and counterintelligence, mm-hmm. I want to talk about this.
Sure.
Because so many people think it's like what they see in the movies. It's a James Bond, mm. you know, and they live it in their fantasies.
Yes.
You've actually lived it.
Yes.
And you've shared in your book and with me privately mm-hmm. about stories of man's biggest downfall. Mm. What do you think is man's biggest downfall?
Women.
And in particular, women. Men.
Look, I let me just go back. You know, I remember my grandfather told me, I'm going to enroll you in military school and I want you to be in the Navy, electrical, you know, type of the, you know, university type guy, you know what I mean? Like, so you look after all the electrical, you know, things, components on the ships, submarines, everything else. So one day you can step it out and, you know, you can do work in civilian life. The moment I was in military school, I changed the straight away enrollment to the submarine, right? My grandfather was infuriated, you know what I mean? He didn't want me to become the combat officer. When the war started, I remember my grandfather, who, as you can hear it, he was taking the big role in my life. All his kids abandoned him, including my mother. So, like, I was the only one who was caring about him. He was a man who didn't know he's going to leave next day because he was in Communist Party. He was a secret police, intelligence. So, you know, it was a time of the revenge, you know what I mean? And he was on top of the list. So me, as 18 years old, I used my influence because it's my grandfather. So people knew it. I fighting for the independence, and I was considered quite courageous young man. He told me, don't ever go into intelligence. What I did, as soon as the war was coming to the end, I was like, how we can come in military counterintelligence? So he was upset so much. And then in 1996, as I say in my book, and I always say this, so I can share this, I was on a intersection in my life, military, civilian life. I have enough of military. It was like almost 12 years, and I was tired, you know what I mean? Even I was in late 20s, I was tired of military, right? It comes this woman into the coffee shop, and I was having a coffee with my friend from my branch. And we're always told, be aware when the beautiful woman comes to you, right? I'm like,
out of nowhere.
Yeah, like,
from the light.
And Phoebe, I'm saying this to you, like, it was like in the movies, like, she comes in.
And you're sitting in the dark, right?
Yeah, like, we're sitting in coffee shop, so she's coming from the light into darkness, so we can see her, but she can't see us, but she comes with another four men. And my friend says to me, oh my gosh, it's hot. And we're like, you know.
Like, what did the four men look like? Were they like built? Like, did they look like they were in intelligence? What?
They look intimidating, but you couldn't know what part they are. Because when you work in that sector, you don't walk around and with a badge, which I always find very fascinating. People tell the girls, you know, I'm working those things. And like, why are you saying these things? You're not supposed to say these things. So when you squeeze him, when you really said to him, listen, I'm working day and day. Are you a part of that branch? And he's like, oh, no, bro. It's, why are you lying? Because it's false pretext, and it's punishable by the very, very severe punishments, right? Sentences. So anyway, she approached me and she gave me envelope. I was thinking it was a joke. And then I realized my life became the double lie. Double lie in the terms I was in military, and I couldn't tell them my bosses in military that I was being approached. So I need to lie, and I need to go for the meetings and all these things. Took 2 years, and then I was accepted in
What was in the envelope?
Address, time, and secrecy. So I was like, it was like as I say, it was like in the movies, like, you know, I was born in a city which is 270 kilometers far away from capital city Zagreb in Osijek. So for me, I catch the midnight train on Sunday night to come Monday morning 8 o'clock for the meeting. So it takes 6.5 hours, 7 hours by train. I was in jeans. I was stinking, like I was smoking then and all these things. So for me, it was a very, very challenging life. You know what I mean? So the downfall was, and that's like continuously through the training and through everything else, was for us was social engineering, and the part of social engineering it is most dangerous was that women will approach you sooner or later and become something more than just acquaintance, which gonna end up somehow for you, you know, in a way you never wanted to end. So, you know, I mean, obviously somebody's gonna send some foreign intelligence agency will send a woman as a part of social engineering modus operandi and befriend you to extract information, and most probably, you know, you're gonna fall in love and you find yourself actually somewhere, who knows where.
So do you think that female spies do better than men?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Men, you see, I have two, I can't tell the names. One was in US, I remember. One was in Sweden, and they both fall in love with wrong women. One never saw, we never saw him. Second one, he betrayed everything what we stand, we fight for. And end of the day, he found himself, you know, in a very precarious position. And that was the end of him so as well. So as a public person and the work and everything else. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, women are very much more stronger than men in intellect and in how to run operations.
Now, you've talked about, you know, going back to the military times,
okay.
You and, you know, the reason I'm bringing this up is because I recently watched a series on Netflix called Special Ops. Mm. And I know you would roll your eyes at it, of course, because it's just so unrealistic, but it's so interesting and captivating. And, yes. And I want to go back to that scene for anyone that's watched Special Ops. It's very easy to get through. It'd probably take you 2 days or 2 nights and, you know, you're done and then you want more. Now, there's a scene where the girl who's working for intelligence mm-hmm. gets kidnapped. I think it's intelligence. Anyway, mm-hmm. and she just – and you know how you describe what you've been through in war and, you know, I think you said it was 3 months of – them like training you physically.
One of the trainings, yes, where they physically try to break you, and it was a 3 months training where they try to assess what's your tolerance on pain and, you know, possibility that you will not be caught and information is going to be extracted from you.
To the that moment. Was during your military days, right? Anyway, so
yeah.
The question that I had was, what did that training teach you in life? And how can people who haven't been through that training have that kind of mindset? Is it possible? Because the torture that you would have gone through is unfathomable. Like, I can't imagine, you know, I mean, even sitting there watching that scene on TV, like watching that scene is like, it's brutal. How did you get through it? Did you just want to die at one point? Like, were there any moments where you were like, just end this now?
Well, one thing I can see from this, I can say from this perspective that everything what I was doing among the other member of my unit and, you know, even, you know, other units in the military I was, you know, you've been observed all the time. So somebody's always there who is noticing you, who sees you and everything else. Endurance, physical endurance, it is the one thing, but mentally it's something what breaks you or remakes you. And that's, I remember those words. Will break you to remake you. And I was like, you know who I am, you know, he's like. Men and women can endure so much if they really want. We all have these breaking points in life.
Of course.
Right? No question asked. And if you believe that I'm the man from titanium, I'm not. You know, there was many moments in my life when I was broken in tears and, you know, crying and everything else. Sometimes from happiness, sometimes because of the sadness, sometimes because of the anger. It's normal, you know what I mean? But I never allow nobody sees my tears. That's the one thing in my life I never allow, particularly my son. He knew it was hard and difficult, I would break it. So those strengths, what they taught me, it's that I need to be self-sufficient, self-resourceful, I need to believe myself. So that all the trainings, preparations, everything else, and, you know, my government, you know, when I was in military and diplomacy, they invested money in you. Like, there's every training costs money. Everything costs money. And I was a good prospect because I wasn't married. I had not kids. So, like, you know, of course, you order somebody who's going to build that, you know, you are a desirable candidate. You know, I mean, there's nothing they need to attach yourself to. So, you know, you can just go straight forward. Things are changing with the life. But what I learned, it's just discipline in what I'm doing something, I need to obtain that results. There's no such a thing in my vocabulary. It cannot be done. Everything can be done. Every problem has a solution even before it becomes a problem. So we have solutions for everything. That's how the society functions. That's how the military functions. That's how intelligence functions. I was always... one of the biggest advantages you can have is when a man or woman is orientated in a patriotic way. So, like, I believe in the cause. I believe that fight for the freedom, democracy in my country was right ages. I need to contribute as best as possible. And my life is there to be taken, if it's necessary, for the goals and results so people can live peaceful life. That's when you're young, you know. I mean, that's the reason why the intelligence is a young man's game, as a 007 says. But the thing it is, what I learned is to be self-sufficient, self-resourceful. I need to believe myself in my capabilities, assess situation before I run into anything and everything. And I know I need to come out as a victorious person. So I will find a way to win. I don't know how, but I'll find a way. And that's what they learn, and that's everybody can do for themselves.
So if you're looking at your son, for example, mm. and the next generation, mm. they most likely won't go to war and experience those kind of battles anyway. We all go through our battles. We all go through war, mm. our own, you know, internal wars as well as, yes. you know, battles, whether it's, you know, in school or, you know, finding ourselves. How can he adopt that kind of mindset? Like, how have you, you know, how have you shown him how to do or overcome those kind of battles when, you know, he's probably unlikely to go through military warfare?
Mm. I think that everything starts with education at home. You know, that's my take. If the men cannot, look, I can't stand some things when I see that most of the men, even to the Matteo generation, my son is called Matteo, right? And I respect this. When he walks in the house, he takes his shoes off. I said to him, do not walk with the shoes in. You're bringing all the dirt inside.
Hallelujah. You're going to make it in China.
Yeah. So, like, whatever you do at home, those small victories, that's what I learned on those trainings. Even when they were breaking me, I'll find the small victories. For example, you know, during interrogation, you know what I mean? I will say, you know, things just to be, you know, reduced, you know, sort of, they call the sentencing, you know what I mean? Like inflicting pain, you know, they give you some food, whatever it is. But I knew it, you know, even if I was laughing inside of me, it was reward for me. Same goes in life. I said to my son, make your own bed, because it's a start to everything. He doesn't make his bed. He doesn't need to make his bed. You know, he just magically happened. It's been made for him. So I made him to understand that making bed, not walking with the shoes in the house, are the basic things in your life. Because if you treat yourself in a way you want to treat, for example, if you don't shower yourself, why your girlfriend will shower herself? And he says to me, what do you mean? I was like, well, you like to stink? He says, no. But do you expect your girlfriend to stink? No. So she expects the same from you, to be smell nice. So those are the small things, conversations. Men today are different. They're expecting that everything, it's freedom is not given. You know, people who say freedom is given, democracy is given, is not. You need to fight for everything in life. And you don't need to fight on the battlefield of the war, and I mean in trenches. They need to fight in life, in business, with family. It's all about survival, you know what I mean? As a C.C. Young always says, is a individual exists for the sake of society, or society for the sake of individual. You need to find your spot where you're going to belong, because don't cry me later on, because whatever I know, I'm injecting you. I give you my son says to me, how did you know it's going to happen this? I say, because I was always wrong. Now I know it's right, you know what I mean? And he says, oh, I understand that. So the kids today need to learn basic things, need to listen, to learn from parents. Parents are the mirror. You know, make your own bed, you know, clean your shoes. I can't understand men in Australia. I'm looking like, you know, they're walking with the dirty shoes. Like, come on, seriously, how hard is to wipe your shoes? You know what I mean? How hard is to change a T-shirt, put the deodorant, you know, small things.
Mm.
That's what it is. So that's I think that the battlefield starts at home, and many kids now have resistance because they don't need to do this. That's the problem I see in Phoebe.
What about people that have the double standards of do this, listen to me, but don't follow my actions?
Don't follow him. You know, I mean, for me, that people doesn't exist. I mean, if you said to me to do something, Joseph Campbell, he wrote a book, The Power of Meat, and he explained his book very well. He says, like, leader needs to lead by their example, right? Same for the parents, and same goes for everybody else. If you telling me, if you preaching something what you don't doing, I will never respect you. I saw in the military. I know my generals, they will never go, they will never fight the wars. They'll come with the choppers, they'll have the nice, you know, fur coats and everything else. But lieutenants with me, and the majors and captains, they will share with me thick and thin, and I'll have respect. So double standards, that's your life. That's everything. It's a lie then. That's a lie, pure lie.
Would you say that you can read people well, Mario?
That's a very interesting question. You know, this doesn't matter how I answer that question. I was trained to recognize the patterns in the conversations and interactions with the humans. Yes, so I can recognize certain traits in the humans. Yes.
So how can men and women, when they're dating, you know, you talk about downfalls and. Obviously, there's a lot of listeners right now who are listening who are in the dating scene, and they have been through trenches themselves. They've been through people that have been deceptive, people that have had ulterior motives, people that haven't been who they said they are. How can we pick those things up, those social cues or those mishaps in conversations? What are some tips that you have for people that can pick those things up early?
Well, look, everybody has a different preferences for the type of man or woman they are attracting in their life, right? You know what I mean? Do you trust somebody? You need to give somebody trust. So, you know, that's the best way. You know, you need to give something to that person nobody doesn't know to see what they're going to do with that information physically, right?
Absolutely.
I think in today's DNA age, everything can be checked, you know what I mean? It can be rectified, can be, you know, accredited, you know, you check credibility and anything else. If the person says one thing and you can't find information about this particular employment or particular operations and anything else, then, you know, like, then you have the doubts. That's okay, you have a doubt. So you give the person benefit of the doubt. But when the person adding more credibility in their life and you know that it's not possible, or you know, you can, if it's too good to be true,
it's most likely too good to be true.
Okay, say goodbye. Because that person is there, done it before. Like, I say something from my experience. I used to be sinking in my life because I was doing things I shouldn't do it, but I was attracting those type of people in my life and events. And I realized that actually it's a me problem because I was dying. I was hanging to be around these people, right? And even I knew it, there was no, because I didn't listen to my intuition. Because I was following, maybe my heart, you know, or maybe my brain, logic or emotions. Then I realized intuition. If something is too good to be true, rid of it. If you don't understand, rid of it. That person say, thank you very much. Enjoy. Go to another one. Simple as that. Don't spend time because these people are going to do everything to burn you, bring you down because they've done to somebody else before. And that type of people are very dangerous. And after all, I feel sorry and pity for every and each one. So, yeah. Trust your intuition. Nothing else. Don't go into big ordeals, checking people's backgrounds and following them and everything else. Why are you spending money? If you know something doesn't sounds right, doesn't look right, just say thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Have the dinner. Goodbye.
Yeah, if something doesn't stack up, it's definitely a red flag. And I think that, you know, you and I have talked about red flags. I've even got a full episode on red flags, episode 52 on the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast. But I think that red flags for men are very different. And I want to hear your perspective.
Okay.
What are some red flags for men that they can spot when they are dating women?
You know, I said to this at the beginning, the men are not women. Women are more logical than men. Men think differently. We are not, you see, if anybody says to me that men is the hunter, is lying. Men are not hunters and talking about relationships, right? For one simple reason. Men can chase the woman, but woman says ultimately says yes or no.
Are they the gatherers?
Well, no, we are more like followers, you know what I mean? Pleasers, you know. I'll talk about relationships, right? So when the man chases the woman, he doesn't chase because she brings her resume with her. I'm a successful businesswoman. I have a child. I have a this. I have a that. Usually it's a physical attraction. That's what it is. Attraction, then comes seduction, and after this comes destruction, right? That's what it is. Most of the men will be physically attracted to somebody. They fall in love with a look, with a smile, you know, with giggling, everything else. And of course, you know, maybe my life is a void. Maybe I have no girlfriend, wife, whatever it is, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever you want to, you know, whatever somebody has their preferences in life. But the bottom line is, women should spot always red flags. When the man talks to the woman, yeah, it's quite often too late because it's like women's are much more smarter than men when it comes to the relationship, and most of the men fall for the false sense of emotional attachment to that woman, and the woman will, if she want to take it away from you, she'll take it, but that's it. So wow. Like, it's hard to say this is the red flag. We all have the different modus operandi. Some man's going to approach you because genuinely he's going to like you, Phoebe. Someone's going to approach you because you have the beautiful hair. Someone's going to have a beautiful smile. Someone's because he's lonely. You never know the reasons. So the flags could be very quickly, you know what I mean, what they want from you, you know what I mean, what they want from you. There's no reason to rush. It's not a movie, you know what I mean? Let's go do 50 Shades of Grey, you know what I mean, like against the wall straight away, this thing. Rushing, it's a one biggest problem. Now, I always say, when something's been rushed, must be done, usually someone's going to stay in tears.
Yeah. So when it comes to vulnerability, you know, there's a lot of men out there, and men and women out there, that are afraid of getting hurt, and they're afraid of putting themselves out there vulnerably, even feeling their emotions. And they go in without their heart intact. They're not connected to their heart. And I see this a lot in modern day dating. It's almost like, you know, it's a transaction and an exchange, as opposed to people going in from their heart, feeling, you know, like connecting, truly connecting, and being completely vulnerable. And that's obviously got to do with a lot of experiences people have had in the past where they wear an armor and guard themselves. What do you say to people that are guarded? You know, I mean, biblically it talks about guard your heart as well. There's a lot of sayings like guard your heart, be careful. But at the same time, when people are guarded, they're not vulnerable. That connection, that depth is now lacking. So what are people meant to do?
Look, I think that love, it's, I think that love is ultimately the universal language of for everything, and solution for everything. You know what I mean? Escape from all problems. As I'm listening to you, I try to picture out, you know what I mean, things like from my past. And I think it's okay to be vulnerable. I think it's okay to be vulnerable. I'll tell you something from my experiences. Like, you know, I've been in position when I open my heart and I be laughed at, you know what I mean, and being, you know, thrown around under the bus and everything else. And of course it hurts, you know, it breaks your heart and everything else. But you know what? Go for it. You know what I mean? Are you happy you fuck my life? You know what I mean? Are you happy because you think you're better now because you try to fuck me up emotionally? Yes, you did it. You know what I mean? What you did to me, you're going to do somebody else again. Not my fucking problem. But will I withdraw myself into the darkness and the coldness and the, you know, self-pityness because somebody smashed me? I feel sorry for them. You know what I mean? Because that's what the type of people they are. But while I will not give chance to me or yourself, Phoebe, or somebody else, you need to give yourself chance to be loved, because we are not meant to be alone. You know what I mean? I try this in my life, try to understand around again and again and again. One thing I learned and what I'm seeing on particularly my travelings, last thing was Nusa this year, and there was a million couples out there. And I couldn't understand none of these couples actually talking to each other. They're all more busy with their phones and how to get pictures and everything else. And I think to myself, where is the love? So it is transaction. I'm with somebody because it's a hot, good look and everything else. But Phoebe, don't, you know, you'll agree with me. Sooner or later, we all wanted somebody to be next to us, to understand us, to hug us, to kill us, you know what I mean, to kiss us and everything else. So like my always advice will be, you will be hurt. You will be smashed against the walls. I feel pity for all these people in my life. But doesn't necessarily, I don't need to give chance to myself. I think you need to give yourself self-chance to meet somebody else and be more cautious, yes. But eventually you will find something what you want. If you really want, you will find that. Mm-hmm. Or will find you. Don't chase. You attract. That's my motto. Never chase things. Attract them. They will come to you somehow, somewhere. I don't know.
I want to get your thoughts on this quote from The Art of War.
Okay.
An ancient classic, a Chinese ancient classic.
Of course, it's a Sun Tzu. Who else?
Sun Tzu says, "He who knows when he can fight and when he cannot will be victorious." Mm. Have there been moments in your life where you've chosen not to engage or made a wise decision where you said to yourself, I'm going to lay this fight down? And what are your thoughts on this quote?
You know, I need to now relate to somebody else as well. And I'm glad that you're quoting Sun Tzu, because Sun Tzu, it is truly the father of the modern warfare, even today. You know, there's three people in my life, they influenced in my life. One of them is Sun Tzu, second is Miyamoto Musashi and Niccolo Machiavelli. The difference is between the West and the East that Eastern philosophers, as a Sun Tzu as well, he was the leader and the general and everything else, his methods applied even today, because we as humans didn't evolve because we are guided by the two principles, either fear or the emotions, right? Now, the point is very fear desire to have, to possess things. So in life, you can't always win every battle by just using brute force or something. Sometimes you need to avoid the battles. When I was young, I loved fighting. Oh, I was, man. And I was being smashed so many times. And I was fighting older guys than me to prove how strong I am and everything else. Military, particularly intelligence in diplomatic environment, taught me how to use my strengths and how to avoid showing my weaknesses. Choosing the battle and maybe sometimes refusing to fight the battle somebody else's terms is the victory itself. Because when somebody tries to drag you into their battle, they have their modus operandi, they have that way they know. Everything's sort of scripted. They're always using the same script to win, 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 win. Hence why Miyamoto Musashi, who was a famous swordsman in 17th century in Japan, 60-plus jewels never won, but he never approached any jewel in the same way. Same Sun Tzu says, avoid the battles because you need to win the battles on your own terms. Why would I fight some of these battles on their own terms? I don't know what they have in store for me. So, you're a recess situation. And sometimes it's better to say, no, thank you very much. You're the good. And then you strike when it's the most best moment for yourself, which Niccolo Machiavelli says in his book, The Prince, to be feared is meaning to be loved. They need to fear you. So you need to strike your enemy often and hard without mercy, in your own terms. So, yes, I choose in my life battles to avoid. I avoided battles somebody else put ahead of me.
Wow.
You need to step back. You know what I mean? It's not a loss. It's not a loss.
It's like the saying, choose your battles wisely.
Mm-hmm. Like you choose wisely who you are surrounding yourself. Choose your wisely, you know what I mean? And as I say, you, Phoebe, you've done it a lot for yourself. You're truly somebody who is a remarkable woman. You know what I mean? Being a woman, it's hard to be in today's society. It's very hard. You know what I mean? We can bullshit ourselves. We have an equal employment opportunity. We have this and that. It's not that case. Being a woman is difficult. We live in a very fast-paced world, where the post-truth world, where the people portray themselves for something they are not. They're selling themselves for something they're not, because it's an instant pleasure, instant, gratification. That's correct. However, one thing what you can do, you can sleep peacefully. Most of people can't, because they will being hunted by their conscience. As I said to you, conscience is something nobody can stop it from you. People go sleep and they know all these bad dreams and people will start chasing you when you relax.
Yeah.
So that's for that one admiring you, for that you travel recently, for 3 months. And I said to myself, being a woman traveling around the globe and smile on the face and everything else, that takes balls for this. That's the courage. That's the courage. I said to you this, say straight away, even if it's a man, but 3 months, being a woman traveling across the globe, it is a difference. And for that one, I commend you, because you are truly very courageous woman. But that's, you choose your battle. You choose your battle to test yourself on your own terms.
Absolutely. I mean, I've done 7 months alone. I mean, that was 3 months where two of the three was alone. One of the things that I did notice is that, especially in Asian countries, a lot of people found it very hard to relate. They were like, what are you doing as a female alone? Like, and when they find out your age, they're like, oh, you should be married. You know, let me introduce you to the island boy or the, you know, the son of, you know, this person or that person. And it was really hilarious because it was like, especially in Asia, they found it really hard to understand how a woman, you know, in her early 30s is still single and not married. And, you know, the choices that we make here in the West are definitely very different to the choices that are thrust upon you, especially in more traditional countries and cultures. And I guess the thing that I wanted to know is, now that you've been through your battles, you've been through life, you've lived life in like so many chapters of life, it's like you've lived so many people's lives because you have done so much. Would you ever look back and change certain decisions that you have made or done things? Of course, you may have done things differently, but would you have changed certain decisions that you've made?
Few of them, yes. One of them would be certainly, but for sure, I'll forgive my parents much more earlier. I'm not holding a grudge against them for so long.
That's a huge one.
Secondly, it's like, you know, when you grow up in family, and my family is a worker's family, right? I mean, typical communist product, factory, drinking, you know, bullshitting, lying to themselves, it's going to be better next year. You know, I remember I always ask my mom, you know, like, I like to go on a coast, I like to go on this, I like to do that. Instead of this, my mom will belt me, my father, you know what I mean? When summer comes, you know, I say, like, I want to have the, you know, Japan, because my father will bash me, says to me, go barefoot because it's good for your souls, you know what I mean? Like, I said, like, and I hold this most of my life against them. When comes to the people, I will change who I choose in my life, absolutely. I will never allow some type of people in my life, you know, particularly people who are lie to me, you know what I mean? Pretend there's something in my life they are not. I think those things I'll change. Everything else will remain the same. I'll still go in a war. I'll still fight for my country. I will still face the same obstacles. You know, nobody has a magic wand for you or me to say it's going to be this or that. You need to believe in yourself. You know, everything what I did in my life, I was told, don't do it. Don't do it your business. People laugh to me. Obstacles lie to me, you know. So many bullshit artists, coaches, you know, I mean, you need to do this, you need to do that. You know, in the business was, for me, I know one thing I learned from the military planning, which is called the pre-mortem analysis, not post-mortem, it's called the pre-mortem analysis. You take in the three worst-case scenarios, you take it from those three worst-case scenarios, you get one, and then you say, like, okay, what worst can possibly can happen, how I can respond. Key objective was, for me, I wanted my business, I want to write the books, one day I want to have the child, even I knew I can't have a kids. You know, it happened. And I done everything, took a time, took a lot of sacrifice, humility, because people's going to humiliate you, but you need to show your humility towards them, not to beat them. And so I will change very few things, everything else will stay the same. You know why? Because they have interviewed you, Phoebe. You see, if somebody told me I'm going to meet somebody with your background, with your passion for life, with your zest for the business, you know what I mean? And that will not happen if I don't have podcast, if I don't have my business. So I will not change, no.
How did you move past that feeling of betrayal?
A lot of healing. A lot of healing, a lot of, you know, self-talks. You know, I mean, sometimes I sit to myself in the cast, like, it is going to be okay, mom, you know, whatever it is. It's painful. It's painful when you see what people done to you. But then, in the same token, I said to myself many times, you know, screw it, you know what I mean? while they're enjoying their life, I'm suffering here. Well, I don't think so. And I'll do it what I want to do it. And that was the moment. And I mean, I'll put another challenge ahead of myself, another challenge, and another book, another podcast, another business, another, you know, whatever it takes, you know what I mean? And as I said, my path was sort of being foreseen by some people in my life, but I didn't believe it. They told me, just patience, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. The good friend of mine and the great mentor of my professor, Clive Smallman, he told me, it's not what you're by nature, but by nurture. So for me, conversion from being the combatant in a war, being somebody who was, because one thing in a war, as I was progressing for 5 years, I was a 5 consecutive years in a war. One thing for me, I become very blunt to pain, very blunt to the feelings, emotions. For me, it was everything automated. I just become a war junkie. I just wanted more action, more this, more that. But Clive told me, it's not what you by nature, but by nurture. So when I met a few people in my life who show me that part, that I can obtain degree, that I can do podcast, that I can talk to Phoebe Lay, that I can do things in my life, it will not be easy, but you can do it. And those little key objectives I put ahead of myself, that was carrying me. So slowly, they become History Channel. That's it.
How did you heal from the anger? Like you would have had every reason and every right to hold grudges or to experience anger and to, you know, become a grumpy old man, so to speak. But instead you evolved and turned into this beautiful human that we can all... I mean, just look at your smile, you know, we were joking before that you are like a giant Teletubby.
Yes.
And I don't know, not everyone gets to walk out of these experiences like this. There are people out there that hold a lot of anger and resentment. I personally have experienced feeling that heaviness of anger and resentment, and I hated every minute of it because... Mario, you and I both know that energy, it literally transforms your face. You know, it changes the lines in your face. And when you see someone that holds on to that kind of anger and that resentment, you see it the moment you meet them. And instead, you have come out with love, healing, forgiveness, joy, all these like airy fairy fluffy terms that people are probably rolling their eyes out at, you know. But you managed, you got through it. How did you do that?
You just answered right now the face expression. 11 years ago, I was attending one event in my family, which twisted my life upside down. And that moment, you know, bad things become worse, like an avalanche. You know, I mean, everything starts snowballing, you know, I mean, in my life. And I'm not going into details, but I become very sick, but not physically, but mentally. And eventually I need to start changing something because I can't change the world. World doesn't stop because of Mario Bekes. Nobody cares for Mario Bekes. There's no book day, you know, which can teach you how to live the better life. There's no person who can teach you how to be happy. There's nobody. It's just you and you. The only person who never gonna lie to you is that person in the mirror. And I couldn't face, that was me. That was the biggest bullshit artist at that moment. It's gonna be okay, you know, families and this and that. Everything's perfect, hunkadori. I'm not fat, I'm 148 kilos. And, you know, it was just the rubbish of my life. You know, just years of putting on the carpet all my lies about myself. My look, you know, how I feel, you know, this and that. Everything's going to be okay. Till moment didn't come when everything just rolled over me. Like a steamroller, avalanche together, you know what I mean? And then when I couldn't even... breathe anymore, I think everybody was just kicking my face, metaphorically, right? So imagine being on intersection in the middle of the nowhere. It's a storm. It's raining. It's lightning. You have no fucking umbrella. And that's how I felt. So I said to myself, okay, what I learned, you know, our survival, you know what I mean? You need to find a shelter. So I need to, metaphorically, so I start building these things slowly, slowly, slowly. But one thing I realized, I need to change myself. I need to start thinking about myself lightly and complex above world. Because before it was like, world owes me, world doesn't know me, I owe myself, you know what I mean, to admit. So I make a pact with my son. I'm going to go back into boxing, you know what I mean? I start writing books and take a different turns in my business, you know what I mean? But I realize that everything in my life, common denominator for all my lies and bullshit and downfalls and bad decisions was me. Me, nobody else. I can't blame Phoebe. But that moment, I blame you even though I didn't know you. I was blaming Phoebe. I was blaming everybody. No, just not myself. Then when I realized I need to change myself, because I saw myself in the mirror, it was a terrible human being in that mirror. Doesn't matter what I did, I was looking terrible to myself. Physically, mentally, emotionally, in every level is possible. Plus I have a kid who's looking at you like a biggest hero, and you lie your own kid that you are something when you're not. You know what I mean? So that's was a rubbish. And then I start changing myself. So I took steps in my life to recognize and rectify all my wrongdoings. I start apologizing to people from my past. I shouldn't apologize. I did. I apologize to myself. I forgive myself. And I stay clearly and focused on my goals in my life. And now 11 years later, that's how I am today. But for that very, till that moment, I was a very different man. I was very... very different man, very negative man.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there that are still living life that way and they can't see that we aren't victims. We actually are not a victim of our situation, because any situation can be turned around, even the most horrific, horrendous situation. You know, there's that amazing lady, I can't remember her name at the top of my head, who, you know, her whole body has been burnt and, you know, she's got scars.
Yeah.
And she turns into this figure, this inspirational figure. And I think, you know, from that, you know, we all look at other people's stories and go, oh, my goodness, I would hate to experience that. But when you go through yourself, your own, you know, downfalls and your own horrendous moments, they are all there for us to grow and to teach us something and to help us evolve into the people that we are. But not everyone actually has the opportunity to see the other side. And I sometimes wonder whether it's because people's minds are just shaped differently, their mindsets, you know, that they just can't see the other angle, the grays, the positivity. I guess I wanted to wrap up this interview by asking you, you know, if you had an opportunity to speak to the people out there that are still in that victim mentality, that are still seeing that the world is against them and blaming others, even being narcissistic about it. You know, we've talked about the definition of narcissist on this podcast. You and I have talked about it as well behind the scenes. And, you know, there's a lot of people that can't see their own wrongs. Everyone else is wrong. It's everybody else's fault except them. What would you say to those people if they one day had a window, just this tiny, teeny, tiny little window of opportunity to flip their mindsets?
You know, when I talk to you, I think eternity is not enough for you to rehash everything. I'll give you the event from my life. It was 15th of January 1996, and my father was a very, very sick man. Following day, I needed to go in a hospital because I need to do big surgery on my jaw and everything else. I was injured. And I remember, I need to see my father, even, as I said, I didn't forgive him, But I knew it was sort of at the end of the, his natural life. And for some reason, my father was like, that day was like all cheerful, all like nothing happened. Like, you know, he was very sick man. Like, and then he told me, I want to share something with you. I want to tell you something. I said, okay, just say it. And I was very cold, you know, I mean, towards him. He says, he started with his, you know, that he loves me. It's like, oh, okay, well, dude, you know, took it 23 years to tell me that he loved me, right? Because my mom, she was, used to be having the expression that she wished the day I was born, I slipped out of her hands and dropped on the towels and died, right? You know, I mean, in the birth. I was like, who? Whose mother says that? You know, my mother only. As you know, that I don't talk about those things because I don't live in, I don't appreciate people talking these crimey river stories. You know, my life was this, my life was that. But my father that day says to me, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that. And I saw the desire to live, to fulfill those dreams, not to be covered, not to lie himself, not to be a victim, because my father was after all was a victim of himself. And I said to him, man, it's a little bit too little, too late. He said, I know, but don't be me. My father passed away a few hours later. And that said to people, don't wait for the world, you know what I mean, to stop for you and recognize you being victim or you looking somebody clarify your wrongdoings or, you know what I mean, somebody, some events from your past. If you want to be victim, stay victim. You know, stay victim. No worries. You're not attached to yourself to me. And that's what I tried to say to you on your previous question. I realized that I know how much I am worth to myself. And those, I want to be surrounding myself with the people who are going to see me as a good in their life. Your life, Phoebe, my son's life. If someone doesn't want me in their life, I don't want to be it. But as soon as I know somebody pretending or try to play the victim, I don't want to be next to you. Because that's who you are. That's all your life. But there's going to come a moment like my dad's moment when he told me, I wish, and I knew it, that he was full of regrets. And a moment comes, he needs to meet, you know, I mean, his maker. So you want to be a victim? Be a victim. I don't care. I want to spend time with the people who recognize they're being victim of something, but they want to do better for themselves. They have all my love, my support, my energy, and I'll do everything for that person to make them better than me any time of the day. That's my advice. If you want to play victim, stay victim. Bro, stay there. I've been there. I know how it's there. I want to be surrounded with people who are better than me. I want to be the people who's going to bring the better in me, and I can give the back to them in the way I possibly can.
Wow, that is so deep, Mario. I am so honored and grateful to have had you on this show.
Thank you.
I had so much fun. You really are a giant Teletubby that's been through war, and it is an honor to have had you on this episode. For those that are listening, if you had value from any snippet of this episode and you feel that this is worth sharing to your friends, your family, or other human beings on this planet, please leave a rating, leave a review, whether it's on Spotify or Apple, and make sure that you share this with your friends and your family. That would be the cherry on top. And the absolute cherry on top is that we get to share these each and every week with you listeners. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you again, Mario, for your time, for your wisdom, for the love that you have, not only for others, but most importantly for yourself. You are truly an inspiration, and it's just been such an honor and such a pleasure to have you on the show again.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Phoebe, for me being guest in your podcast. Thank you.
From the bottom of my heart and from our listeners as well. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.